Hello, everyone. Welcome to this week's episode of the Men Podcast. I'm Demi Wright, and if you haven't joined us already, don't forget to follow us on Instagram at mem.cast for a weekly question of the week. This week, we're doing rheumatology, and we have Dr. Mohita Damani. Hi, Mohita.
Hello.
Thanks for joining us.
No worries. Thank you for having me.
The rheumatology registrars in the East Midlands. This week, we're going to be talking about polymyalgia rheumatica, or PMR, as most of you might be familiar with. And it's one of those common rheumatological conditions. So I just thought it'd be good for everyone to have an overview on. So let's start. So Mohita, can you start us off? What is PMR?
So PMR is polymyalgia rheumatica, and it's one of the most common inflammatory rheumatic diseases in the elderly. And it tends to cause pain and stiffness in the shoulders, necks and hips. Both sides tend to be affected and generally tends to affect women more than men. And age group wise, it tends to affect those over the age of 70, but can affect anyone over the age of 50 onwards.
Okay. And why is it important for us to identify it?
So as a condition, it's very painful, but kind of one of the other parts to bear in mind is those that have polymyalgia rheumatica are at a higher risk of developing a condition called giant cell arthritis. And for this condition, urgent treatment is required as there's an increased risk of permanent loss of vision or potentially having a stroke.
Okay. So in terms of presentation then, how do you make the diagnosis of PMR?
So generally speaking, so as mentioned before, anyone over the age of 50, and they present with sort of bilateral shoulder pain and stiffness and pelvic girdle pain and stiffness. Generally, we say that the symptoms are present for more than 2 weeks. And a lot of people complain of morning stiffness, and this can last for over 45 minutes. Patients may complain of having difficulty getting dressed, reaching for things such as, you know, getting food off shelves, washing themselves, climbing stairs and getting out of bed. Okay. Now, a few of these patients can get associated systemic symptoms such as fever, weight loss, loss of appetite, but not everyone does. And especially if it's just been going on for sort of 2-3 weeks, not everyone does develop these symptoms.
Right.
Most of the patients have an excellent response to steroids, and usually you see a raised CRP on the blood tests.
So in terms of all of these symptoms, is it part of a diagnostic criteria? Like, do you need, say, 4 out of all of these, or is it kind of more, you know, if the picture fits type of thing?
So there's not a definitive diagnostic criteria. Generally speaking, we need the symptoms to be bilateral. So you don't want them to say, actually, I've just got shoulder stiffness and pain in one shoulder. It's sort of bilateral. And a lot of people complain of the pelvic girdle pain as well. Ideally, duration needs to be 2 weeks or more. And with the associated inflammatory sort of components of the morning stiffness lasting about 30, 45 minutes. And as mentioned before, the blood test should show a raised CRP. And obviously the age group as well should be in keeping.
Right. Okay. So if it's someone less than 50, would you kind of think of something else?
Yeah, exactly. So the way I sort of think of it is it's a diagnosis of exclusion. So there's not a specific blood test, but if the picture isn't quite in fitting with the diagnostic criteria, we need to think of alternative diagnoses.
Okay. So you just mentioned the diagnostic tests. You said there's no diagnostic ones, but is there anything that's particularly helpful? I know you mentioned the CRP. Are there any particular antibodies that are useful?
So not any particular antibodies, and there's not really any imaging that we'd use. So as I mentioned, it's a diagnosis of exclusion. So we expect the typical symptoms, so bilateral, pelvic girdle pain, morning stiffness and duration more than 2 weeks, and obviously in the age group. We would expect a rise in the CRP, but it's also important to exclude other causes of a raised CRP, such as, I don't know, infection, malignancy, inflammatory myopathies, if there is a clinical concern. And again, that would tie in with the symptoms. Generally speaking, when I see patients who have been referred as a polymyalgia, I do the routine blood tests, so the FBC, UNE, LFT, CRP. If there's any other concerns, I'd also check immunoglobulins, thyroid function tests, CK, and perhaps do a chest x-ray and urine dip, depending on what the symptoms are. And in the absence of a raised CRP, you definitely need to consider alternative diagnoses.
Right. Okay. So you mentioned like things that can present like it include, you know, cancer or active disease. So do you actively screen for these before making a PMR diagnosis? So would you go and do a CT chest abdo-pelvis or temporal artery biopsies, or do you mainly do it based on whatever symptoms the patient presents?
So I think my approach to when I have been referred a patient with query polymyalgia is I kind of split it into, are the symptoms typical, in which case the symptoms are typical, raise CRP, I sort of proceed and treat as polymyalgia rheumatica. If the symptoms are atypical, or for example, if there's not a raised CRP, I start to look for alternative diagnoses. So, for example, some of the atypical features would be if it's sort of age group less than 50, 60, a chronic onset, lack of shoulder involvement, and lack of that morning stiffness. If I find that someone's got quite good going peripheral arthritis with the, obvious synovitis, if there's any features in keeping with a connective tissue disease or muscle disease. So, if the pain is more prominent than this sort of stiffness, I start to think, could this be an underlying myopathy? And equally, I know that we said we have a raised CRP, but if the CRP is very, very high, that's also a worrying feature. And again, predominantly, if there are red flag symptoms such as the night sweats or weight loss, I'd think malignancy and arrange appropriate imaging such as, CT chest, abdo, pelvis. Just one thing to mention is if there are features of giant cell arthritis and that's your abrupt onset temporal headache or tenderness, any visual disturbance or jaw claudication, I'd go down the pathway of investigating and treating for giant cell arthritis, as these patients will require a higher dose of steroids than those who are being treated for polymyalgia rheumatica.
Right. So you mentioned that the if the CRP is very high, then that would kind of raise your spidey senses. So what's a typical CRP that you would expect that would say, okay, yeah, this is in keeping?
It's a difficult one to answer because there's not a definitive criteria, but I'd probably say if it's anything from above 10 to, I don't know, 80, 90, 100, I'd probably say fine, we could consider PMR. If it's kind of going above 100, that's when warning bells start to ring a little bit and you think, oh, I need to think of an alternative diagnosis.
Right, fair enough. Okay. And so, what is your general approach to management of these patients? I know you had mentioned that they tend to be pretty responsive to steroids.
So, as per the British Society for Rheumatology guidelines, we start patients on prednisolone 15 milligrams once daily. We generally keep these patients on this dose for about 3 weeks, maybe a tiny bit longer. But usually, after the 3 week mark, they've responded really well and their symptoms appear to be well controlled. And the key thing is to try and drop down the dose, or taper off the dose nice and slowly. So then I tend to kind of go to 12.5 milligrams for about 3 weeks, 10 milligrams for about 4 to 6 weeks, and then reduce by a milligram every 1 to 2 months, obviously taking into account their symptoms and tailoring it individually to patients as well.
Right. Okay. And I know you had mentioned, a case where you'd need higher steroids, so if they had GCA, but are there any cases where higher steroid doses would be necessary?
So for polymyalgia rheumatica, generally speaking, 15 milligrams once daily at the initiating dose is enough to control the symptoms and bring the CRP down to an appropriate level. Generally speaking, about 70 to 80% patients have global improvement within 1 week. But again, if they aren't responding to steroids, that's another sort of sign that you should be thinking of an alternative diagnosis. It
Right.
can take a little bit of time for the CRP to come down because it does lag a little bit. So there are cases where it's taken a few weeks for the CRP to come down. It's not a totally immediate response. In some patients, you can consider, rather than a higher dose, you can consider IM steroids in sort of milder cases, and especially for those who may be suffering with any of the steroid-related sort of complications, that might be an appropriate choice.
Right.
And just one other thing, well, a couple of other things to mention. So when we do prescribe steroids, we also prescribe a tummy protection agent. So any sort of PPI and bone protection is very important to prevent the complications of osteoporosis. So if you've got a patient that's potentially at a high risk of fracture, so for example, over the age of 65 or any previous fragility fractures, we'd initiate them on a bisphosphonate with calcium and vitamin D supplements, and we wouldn't necessarily go ahead and book a DEXA in this instance. For other patients who are sort of slightly less risk of fractures, we can initiate them on calcium and vitamin D supplementation when we start the steroids, and a DEXA scan is usually recommended. And generally speaking, sort of a bone sparing agent may only be required if the T score is less than 1.5 in these category of patients. So, yeah.
Okay, I think it's really interesting, and I think I guess I just want to highlight to everyone is just that dose of 15 milligrams, because in my mind, when I'm thinking, okay, someone has a rheumatological condition, we need to get on top of it and like suppress it and then they'll be fine. So you kind of think, oh, they need a minimum of 30. So actually it's really interesting that actually 15 milligrams is more than enough to treat these patients. So yeah, I just wanted to highlight that for everyone who didn't realize that, like myself.
The advice that we'd give patients is not to stop taking the steroids suddenly. If they're suffering with any side effects or anything, we'd ask them to call our advice line, because obviously stopping steroids suddenly or equally tapering them off quite quickly can potentially cause a flare of the polymyalgia rheumatica.
Okay. And then at that 15 milligrams, would you, I mean, it's kind of like that in between dose, isn't it? Would you still advise like sick day rules or?
Yes, I think it also depends how long they've been on the steroids for, but generally patients with polymyalgia rheumatica, they're going to be on steroids for a long period of time. I mean, treatment can last anywhere between 1 and 3 years in some people, so I would advise the sick day rules, yes.
Okay. And how often do you follow up these patients?
So we see them at the initial appointment. I mean, just a point to mention is, generally speaking, GPs do diagnose and manage polymyalgia. So the patients that we see tend to be the ones that they're a bit unsure about the diagnosis, or they're finding that they're not responding well to the 15 milligrams of steroids, or equally are not able to taper off. And then we get the common questions from the GP, which is they keep having flares. Can you see them? So if we're seeing these sort of patients, we see them at the initial appointment a few weeks after, obviously, to check the response to the 15 milligrams of steroids. And then I tend to book in an appointment about 6 weeks after that. And at this point, they should be at the 10 milligram mark. And then we're trying to taper down much slower. And then see them roughly every 3 months or so. We can do telephone follow-ups as well. And we can always send out a blood form in the post. And generally, just prior to the appointments, we get them to have their CRP checked, and obviously, if any other bloods are required as well, just to make sure it's on the downward trend.
Okay. How often do you get people that will have a relapse after a course of steroids? Or is it typical that after they've been treated efficiently, effectively, that you'd expect the disease to, burn out, as it were?
Yeah, I think according to studies, 15 milligrams of prednisolone and then weaning down appropriately at the sort of relatively slow level, it should manage and treat the polymyalgia. However, relapses can occur. I don't have sort of a figure for them, but it tends to be more common when patients reach a dose of prednisolone a bit lower, it's 5 to 7.5 milligrams a day. And the key sort of things are speed of tapering down these steroids is considered to be a big factor in influencing the development of relapses. And in these patients, we need to sort of decide that actually, rather than going up and down the steroid dose, is it worth keeping them on a low dose of prednisolone long term? So this may be kind of a 5 milligram dose. And this would be a discussion with the patient, sort of going through the risks and benefits and coming up with a balance for that. And in some of these patients, you may need to consider introducing a disease modifying treatment such as methotrexate if long term prednisolone isn't appropriate.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you so much, Mahita. That was extremely helpful.
No, don't worry.
A nice whistle-stop tour of PMR. And to our listeners, don't forget to follow us on Instagram at mem.cast for a weekly question of the week. If you do have any special requests, please do get in touch. We'll see you next time.